It's a very, very good question. The question is, what about the Soviet ideological commitment, and what about the possibility that we should link Soviet human rights policy with our arms negotiations? Essentially, my view is that we ought to deal with the Soviet Union. We ought to improve the working relationship, whatever they do. The more serious their conduct, the better we are able to influence them if we're talking with them, if they're talking to us, and if we're dealing with them. I do not believe that not talking is the best use of our persuasive talents. I do not believe that... detente was misunderstood by both sides. The Dove said that peace is so important we shouldn't talk about our serious differences, and the Hawk said our differences are so serious we shouldn't talk. And no one was talking about serious differences. So on the question of should we improve the relationship or should we make it conditioned on their changing behavior, I would improve the relationship so that we can bring our values and to bear more heavily on their conduct and understand their problems and work on them effectively. On the question of linkage, it's whether it's linkage by threat or linkage by offer. If we say, we've got a disagreement here, tell you what we'll do this if you'll do that. If we say, you know, if you really improve your human rights policy, we know you think it's an internal matter, but if you did that, we'd be prepared to cut this back here. When you link by making an offer, you expand the area of potential agreement. When you link by threat and saying, we will make no arms control until you agree on human rights, and they say, we will agree nothing on human rights until you abandon Star Wars. And we say, we will not abandon Star Wars and they get out of Afghanistan. We will not get out of Afghanistan. Let's do. If you link a negative linkage that says, I won't do this unless you do that, that takes a modest disagreement, even if terribly important, and tends to expand it over the entire spectrum. So I favor linkage as an intelligence matter of learning what we can from anything, and it may apply to other behavior. I favor linkage by offer, if we're not getting somewhere, to say, tell you what we'll do this if you'll do that. I do not favor negative linkage, which is, I won't do what you want unless you do something I want first, because that tends to expand like Topsy across the whole array of relationships. That's my answer.
Yes, Professor Fisher, you mentioned mediation, the concept of mediation. How do you see it fitting into the future in business and industry as a way of dealing with dispute and conflict? Where is it would fall between the cracks of any personnel policy or any labor management agreement that may be in place?
The question is on mediation. How do I see the role of mediation, particularly in business, in labor management, and elsewhere? Managers are largely mediators. The bigger the company, the less the higher executive is an expert on steel or nuts and bolts or aircraft design, the more he's an expert on getting people to reach agreement. He doesn't know between production and design, between marketing and something else, the detailed facts. He is someone who can bring people together and mediate a difference. He may not call it mediation, but management increasingly is a process question of how do I learn your interests, generate some options, get you to improve them, and then get a decision made. And one of my Russian colleagues asked me, he said, what's the difference between what you say about negotiation and decision theory? You say if two people are going to reach an agreement, they should clarify the interests involved, they should generate a lot of options before they decide, they should look for objective standards of fairness and then decide. What difference would you give one person who had the power to decide? Wouldn't you ask exactly the same questions, clarify the interests and so forth? So I increasingly think that the manager is sort of an entrepreneurial mediator, and we will get, I hope, increasing recognition of this over time.
Thank you very much. Dr. Fisher, I now call upon Professor Jos Bloom of the Faculty of Law at University of British Columbia to thank our speaker.
Let me give you a mic. Ladies and gentlemen, the study of law, the academic study of law, is a field where you don't find all that many pioneers. There aren't that many undiscovered laws or unknown areas to study. But tonight, our speaker is a pioneer in the field that he has developed. His interest in international law, particularly, and in how the law works, has led him to examine negotiation in this fascinating blend of theory and practice, looking at it not just as an object to sort of dissect and study, but as something, a human institution that's got to be made to work and got to be made to work better. And as we've seen tonight, his ideas are so compelling and so natural on this subject that I think they immediately become part of the way that we look at this problem and make us wonder why this field has been neglected for so long. And one thing which strikes me, as I think it probably strikes all of us, is the basically optimistic message or challenge that comes out, that what a lot of it comes down to is simply that the best way to get what we want, whether our best chance of getting what we want, whether we're talking about a new fridge or a new nuclear arsenal, is to behave like rational, sympathetic, and honest people. And that's a good message, one well worth hearing, particularly when it's said as eloquently and as entertainingly as it was tonight. And I'd just like to say how delighted we are, Professor Fisher, that you could make time in a really strenuous schedule to come and speak to us tonight. Thank you very much.